Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Today's Magha Puja, 25:49 or so. Over 2,550 years ago. Day that we can still celebrate, rejoice in it, rejoice in something that happened to over 2,550 years ago. A spontaneous gathering, spontaneous, unplanned, unorganized, they didn't all text each other or send emails to write an agenda or sorted out, spontaneous gathering of 1,250 and more probably, and more people. The 1,250 had all become bhikkhus just at the calling of the Lord Buddha. Ehi bhikkhu. And they were all fully enlightened. No more tendency to create further karma. Worth celebrating, eh? Worth celebrating, worth rejoicing in. Worth really considering, well, what does that really mean? On the edge of the Chilterns, on a damp winter's day, with just a few friends, a few acquaintances, a few people, and more especially this heart that I, this being that I live with here and now. How does this work for me? Well, certainly the idea of being able to celebrate something like that is uplifting And it's lovely this evening to see the temple, reasonably warm, the lights, candles, people we've been sitting with. People who just come specially for this celebration, this Sangha Day, it's called. For us, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Yeah. Very precious jewels, safe refuges, guiding principles, directions. And this is Sangha. This is the day for this contemplation Sangha community. And the willingness to train in this sense of community, the willingness to actually train as a human being to uphold the Dhamma in our lives, Sangha. You have this Owada Parimokkha, which is all the Buddhas have ever taught this much. Not all the Buddhas, they say, actually taught the full Parimokkha, the full Vinaya, but all got this far. All did this much, and some Buddhas do the full Parimokkha in the way that the story goes, stories go, but all the Buddhas taught the Owada Parimokkha, which are these bits of paper that you've got in front of you now, because we're organized now and we have people who print these out. And these are three verses that are in the Dhammapada now. They're now recorded in the Dhammapada. They're recorded in other parts of the scriptures as well, but the Dhammapada has them as verses 183, 184, 185, now numbered. And in the Dhammapada's been translated so many times from Pali. I think the first Western language it was translated to was Latin by a Dane, which is the way that things work. And, so I had, this is what every Buddha teaches, and through the years of one's life, through years of my life, to recognize, well, what is this saying? Patient endurance, the foremost austerity. Kanti, the willingness just to bear with things. In the chant that we did, the verses of the victory of the Buddha, Bahung, which we do, it's one of the first victory that's mentioned in this, that victory chant, is the victory over Mara, the victory over that which says, among other things, you have no right to be happy. You have no right to realize complete enlightenment. Or tries to tempt one or confuse one. That's what Mara is. That force in one's, in my universe that says, you don't really want to be completely happy, you just want to have a little bit of pleasure. You have the right to get angry with that person. You have the right to be right. And that person's then definitely wrong. Or you have the right to just fall into all sorts of confusion and sadness, distraction. That's where you should be. That's Mara. And in the chant that we have there, the victory over Mara is through Kanti, patience. Patience. Being willing to bear with it. Just stay and sustain. The Buddha, in the sense of the Buddha, sustained. In the sense of awakening, sustained. And the Buddha doesn't kill Mara. The reply that the Buddha gives to Mara is, I know you, Mara. I know you. Shines that light of awareness and sustains it. So it's the supreme burner of defilements. Tapo is actually like a burning. Paramang is the highest. Fighting fire with fire. I'm willing to just, you know, the Buddha's determination under the Bodhi tree was, you know, I'll sit here. Should my flesh wither away, my bones crumble to dust, I will realize enlightenment. That sense of patient endurance really, really willing to stay with it, willing to give one's life, put the life on the line. It's a bit tough, but that's the thing, you see, because Nibbana is the greatest pleasure, the greatest happiness. It's the foremost. The top. Nibbana. When the fire finally goes out. You know, bhikkhus are not supposed to light fires on the earth. Right? Because it's one of these rules that we have. But there is a time when you can. It's to fight a fire. If the fire is attacking the building, then you can use fire to fight fire. Because that way the whole thing is and all the fuel is gone. And that's where the coolness is. And Nibbana is that which is cool. Really that which is cool. Nibbana is the height, and that's what we're aiming for. So patience to sustain through till it becomes cool. And don't injure, but don't injure yourself in all of this, and don't injure anybody else. He who injures another is not a contemplative. He who mistreats somebody is no samana, no peaceful person. So it's not through a sense of cruelty or injury or causing any sort of pain in that, but just staying with it, not mistreating another, not injuring another, not injuring oneself, not injuring others. It's really worth it. Really contemplate that. How does that work within one's own life? Not to injure, not to cause pain. See, well, is that what one's generating? You know, the next line makes it even clearly, sapabhapassakaranam, not to do anything that's actually evil. Really to avoid that which is really harmful. That's what the five precepts are about, to really try to not do anything that's evil. Quite a strong word, actually, papa. It's quite a strong sense of something that's really, really is going to cause a lot of pain in one's heart that one will have to then live with. To really avoid that. Yeah, I mean, we've all done things that we've regretted and caused pain to people. Cause pain to ourselves, but and we know the sort of traces that that leaves. And we've really done that sort of pain, caused that sort of pain to ourselves or to others. And so of course, there's nothing we can maybe do about it now. But really not to really shrink from repeating that mistake if the mistake has happened. Not to know it, to see it, not to pretend it's other than that, but to sustain awareness. What does it feel like now? Strong determination not to repeat it, not to cause pain to oneself or to others, not to do things that are actually evil, killing, stealing, messing around sexually, lying, deceiving, misusing intoxicants, drunk, taking drugs. This, you know, it leaves a trace that's difficult. to work with. Not impossible, but difficult. And certainly when one lives with the Buddha, the instruction and the encouragement in this, if one's interested in the Sangha in the sense of somebody who's willing to train oneself, then that's to actually not do it. Not do it, not do things that are evil. Not really getting that really clear to oneself, because that's a very clear instruction. No, I've done not that bad, but certainly not in the last 25 years. I've not done a lot that's been left a lot of trace, and that's a very happy thing to be in. I haven't been blind drunk once in the last don't know how long. You know. And I'm very grateful for that, frankly. Doesn't interest me. And there were times when I was foolish, because I didn't really know anything about the Buddha. Didn't really know what was possible. Talking to the big white telephone. Not a pleasant thing to live with, and doing things that are regretful. You see what happens, the consequences of that. And traces through our lives. And most of us have not done anything that's completely off the wall, because otherwise we probably wouldn't be able to sustain our lives here, or be able to stay with it, sustain our attention. So, to really make a strong determination, and with that, really cultivate that which is skillful. I mentioned before over the last few days how there's a difference between these two things. Is bapa is something that's actually quite evil, quite nasty. And not to do that is don't do it. Don't do anything that's actually, you know, when you know something's really wrong and then you still do it, knowing that it's wrong and enjoying knowing that it's wrong, that's evil. When you can't help yourself, then you're just being caught by Mara and being pulled around. But actually, when you're getting pleasure out of doing something that's actually nasty, you know, putting the knife in and twisting it, that's something you don't do. Because you have to live with the consequences of that, and that's horrible. But to cultivate that which is skillful, kusala supasampada, it's a very useful word, but it's not saying cultivate wonderful things. It's just cultivating anything that's skillful. Doing any little bit that's skillful, anything that's skillful, any little bit of generosity, anything that is a little bit of renunciation, anything that actually brings a little bit of more skill and care into one's life, anything that cultivates a little bit more sensitivity. Anything that's willing to stay with things a little bit further. Anything that's prepared to go that little bit more. Kusala covers the whole range of that. From any little tiny thing to really lovely things, really grand gestures. very beautiful things, but anything. Kusala is a very, 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 very wide word. And the opposite of kusala is actually akusala, and it doesn't say refrain from anything that's akusala, because that would be a little bit too much, I think, as an instruction. Don't do anything that's unskillful. Got no room for any sort of mistake. Just don't do things that are actually evil. And cultivate that which is skillful, and then you've got a chance. You're in with a chance there. Because if you say, well, don't do anything that's unskillful, I think you're winding yourself up too much. But just do what you can. That's what I read from this. I mean, you have to figure out yourself how this works for you. In that way, you're taking the care to actually cleanse the heart. Actually just cleanse the heart. Get a bit clearer. Make the thing a bit clearer. This is training, education, as in Jayasaro's term, definition of Buddhism or description of Buddhism is a training or an education. Education, he tends to call it. I think that's why he's interested in this school so much. So he calls Buddhism an education. He doesn't say it's a religion. It's not like a faith-based religion. It's just an education. It's leading out of confusion. Educate is to lead out from. Lead out of ignorance. An education, a training. And a recognition that these things called humans are capable of training themselves. Educating themselves. Of course, it really helps. Everyone has good companions. And this is what Sangha is about. Association with the lovely, association with company that's beautiful. Which is the whole of the holy life. And being willing to actually educate this being that we live with. Cleanse its heart. This is the teaching of the awakened one. This is the teaching of the Buddha. This is the Buddha Sasana. The Dhamma Vinaya. The Dhamma Vinaya. Not just the Dhamma, but the Dhamma Vinaya. In the first book of the Tripitaka, the first basket of the Tripitaka is the Vinaya. Is the training, is the thing that one actually has to undertake, one has the privilege to undertake. The privilege to undertake the five precepts, the privilege to undertake the eight precepts. It's a privilege to be able to do this. A privilege to be able to live by the five precepts. It's an incredible good fortune to have actually heard about the five precepts. Incredible good fortune. Just such a practical and sensible handful of instructions. Train oneself not to kill, not to steal, not to misuse sexuality, not to lie, not to get intoxicated. Gosh, I wish I'd heard about them a long time ago. All this stuff about God and coveting one's neighbor's whatever it is, I can't remember. It didn't really make sense to me. But a sensible thing, this is what we can train with. And then this is enough. Five precepts is well enough for human existence. It's actually what makes human existence possible. But we just don't notice it. And then eight precepts, wow, you can go a bit further. You can just practice this from time to time. And then this lot, the 227 or the 20,000 that are in there. It's OTT, but still. There's something very beautiful about that, undertaking that level. When I first saw these strange creatures wrapped up in sheets, I thought, good on them. This is something that's important. To see 1,250 spontaneously gathered, whoa, that's worth celebrating. That's what we're celebrating today, that possibility. And then the next few lines is you can look up in Access to Insight. Actually, Ajahn Lee Dhammadharo has a very good essay on the next four or five lines, which are a sort of summary of the training. Again. These Buddhists, they can't do one thing one time, you know, they have to do it three times. you've got three verses for the Avada Parimokkha. And it's three times that the training is repeated, actually. Repeated. Summarized in three different ways. See, it takes a lot of patience not to disparage or injure anybody. You know, so easy just to get caught, and Mara gets one, drags one away, and one doesn't actually have a sort of stability to stay with things. Gets caught in disparaging oneself, gets... No, that's a good one, isn't it? How much time does one spend disparaging oneself? Putting oneself down, hopeless case, can't do this. Da, 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 da. I'll give myself a treat, that'll cheer me up, I need that. No. Blup, blup, blup. No, it's... Oh, I feel terrible, I've indulged myself. I need a treat to cheer myself up again. Oh, I feel terrible, I've indulged myself. So, so not to disparage anybody, not to injure anybody or anything. And then just not having a sense of training, having something that one, so that one stays close to Nibbana, one remembers the coolness of Nibbana. Remembers the coolness of Nibbana. That's the whole of the training is just for that. Remembering the sense of coolness of Nibbana. Sense of ease that Nibbana is, sense of the highest happiness. Why settle for less? Why settle for a lesser happiness when you have the opportunity for the greatest happiness? That's the sort of advertisement anyway, isn't it? But in order to get the best, you have to be able to give everything. But it's there, it's possible. Knowing how much to consume, knowing how much to consume, knowing how much one needs to sustain this life, training oneself to actually find a sense of moderation. That's difficult, because it's not what the advertisements say, it's not what most things say. Most of the time there's that sense, well, I don't have enough, need more. Most of the advertisements are saying, well, you can't be happy unless you get, unless you have. And the whole of the training is about that. In most of the training of life, most of our lives has been against moderation. And there's a great sadness about that, that the life, a lot of the capitalist life is about getting more. It's not about contentment. Contentment is so important. One wants to be happy, but one can't find contentment, one's lost. Lost. You need contentment before one can find happiness. Contentment with exactly how things are. And that's where patience comes back. Patience is a supreme austerity. Because patience is about contentment. Being able to bear with things exactly as they are. This moment is like this. And this is the way that it is now. This is all there is now. This is exactly what's on my plate now. It's not maybe what I want, but it's what is there now. But I want a better. I want a better teacher. I want a faster car. I want somebody who's going to help me all the time, who's going to always understand me. I want the best. I can't get it. I can't progress without. I need to become. Oh. I need to become in order to be enlightened. There's a contradiction there, isn't there? I need to become in order to become, in order to be enlightened. If you're becoming, you're into birth, you're into death, you're into I've got too much, I've got too little. I'm lost. I have to bear with it as it is. Patience is the supreme austerity. Patience is the supreme austerity. Nibbana is the highest happiness. Dwelling in seclusion. Dwelling in seclusion, dwelling in a place where one's alone, alone, even in company, alone, the seclusion of this moment, the ideal solitude is this moment. That's the ideal solitude. It's just then okay if one has a quiet place, but the ideal solitude is this moment. Wherever, whatever is to this moment, I quite like busy terminals and I like going through London in the rush hour. I quite like it actually. I like to be alone in all of that. I like the sense of aloneness that comes with that. It's not that I'm antisocial or anything, but when I'm walking in a street or walking in a terminal or something, I like to notice the space and not dwell very much on noticing people or things, just enough to figure out which platform to get to or where to go, and then the rest, just not to notice the sounds or the shapes or the people or get caught up in any of that, just the space. And actually behind, things can be quite quiet actually internally. I think it's easier if things are anonymous. If I'm in a room like this and I'm sitting up here and I haven't got my eyes closed and I'm looking at all of you, then I've got this, all this sort of, it's very difficult just for it to be in just space, because they've got all these stories going on as the eyes are sliding over all the shapes. And just to stay with the solitude of this moment before the stories, before the judgments. Adi chitteja yogo, being linked to that which is the ultimate. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. All the Buddhas. I don't know, this. Now, as I mentioned, there are many, many translations, many interpretations, many stories around these three little verses. And if your life, if you just take this much to contemplate, it would probably be enough. I mean, it's often these three verses are often taken as the sort of summation of the Buddha's teaching. Of course, you can probably find the summation of the Buddha's teaching in many, many different ways, and to find one that works and to sustain it for yourself Wish yourself very well. It's maybe not what you wanted this evening, but it's what you got. So if it's of any use, great. If it's not, just leave it behind and continue.